Hi, this is Gary Kemp from Spandau Ballet, and this is Guy Pratt, and you're listening to the What Difference Does It Make podcast.
Hey, Holly.
Hey, Dave.
What's happening today on the What Difference Does It Make podcast?
I'm feeling awesome yet again. As awesome, or maybe even more awesome than I did last week when we spoke with Nick Mason of Nick Mason's Saucerful of Secrets. How are you doing?
You're sticking with awesome. Well, very good. Well, yeah, fun fact, he's more Spandau Ballet than Pink Floyd. So I think she is very excited about today's episode, because who do we have in our neighborhood today?
Well, today we have two members of Nick Mason's Saucerful of Secrets, Gary Kemp and Guy Pratt, but our listeners probably know Gary Kemp as the guitarist from Spandau Ballet.
And when you say our listeners, you say yourself.
That may very well be, but I know that we have some listeners like me who know Gary Kemp from Spandau Ballet. And also we spoke to him last year when he released his solo album In Solo. So we're speaking with him today and with Guy Pratt. He's been playing with everybody, including Pink Floyd. So he is well-versed in the music he's playing with Nick Mason.
Yeah, as we get into this episode, you'll find out that Holly and I really weren't necessary for this podcast. We just kind of lobbed the ball their way, and they just kind of lobbed it back and forth between themselves, and occasionally they tossed it to us. But for the most part, this is the Guy and Gary show. How else might someone know what's going on with What Difference Does It Make, and to find out where we're going to be and where in the world we are at any time, at any moment, at any given time and place?
You mean aside from being at the Orpheum Theater on October 25th?
Yeah, wherever our head's at. How do they find out where we're at?
You can find out more about us, what we're all about, who we're talking to on our social media at WDDIM Podcast. And you can check out videos from lots of our previous interviews on our YouTube channel at What Difference Does It Make Podcast.
All right, so let's get into the Guy and Gary show on the What Difference Does It Make Podcast. This is Guy Pratt and Gary Kemp right now.
I just realized I've been on this show before.
We've called you the friend of the show here, so welcome back.
Nice to see you again. Hi, Guy.
Hello there. Hi. I had a little listen to some of Steve Diggle this morning.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
He's the best.
Well, very, very good choice of guest.
I wanted to get your kind of your origin story with Pink Floyd, because I believe, I know Gary was considered a Blitz kid. I'm sure... Guy, same thing. Was it cool to like Pink Floyd?
No, absolutely not. No, it was much more visceral in Britain than over here. I mean, it was like, you know, the music you listened to was the clothes you wore, and you had to be prepared to get beaten up for that. Pink Floyd was so uncool, except for the Syd Barrett stuff. I went to see them do The Wall every night at Earl's Court, looking like Joe Strummer off London Calling, you know, and feeling completely and utterly out of place. When I got the Pink Floyd gig amongst my peers, it wasn't a cool gig to get. So, you know, but it was impressive. It was impressive, but it wasn't cool until...
Sorry.
Yeah. Sorry, Gary. No, go on.
No, go on. Until I'm waiting. I waited with bated breath.
Until the whole Acid House thing started. And then I remember when we played at Main Road in Manchester in 1988, and suddenly all these kids who Noel Gallagher told us was every football hooligan in the Northwest, they'd all discovered ecstasy and they'd all discovered Pink Floyd. And we were suddenly the coolest thing in town. And it was brilliant. So it all came full circle.
They were too happy to make judgments, really, weren't they? But I loved the Floyd from Dark Side, I think, you know, because I was about 13 when I first heard that, and went with my brother to see them do Dark Side of the Moon. And I guess I must have only been 14 when they played at Wembley Empire Pool, and my brother would have been 12. You know, we think of only grown-ups going to see Pink Floyd, don't we? Grown-ups weren't allowed into rock gigs ever. You know, you never saw them.
There certainly weren't VIP ticket experiences back then.
And they did Dark Side, and they did some new material, which eventually became parts of the next two albums, Shiny Crazy Diamond and Animals. And I was really into them. And obviously when punk came along, I sold lots of my records. And I'm so upset about that. But out of some sort of deep connection politically, I think I took them down to a cheapo's in Soho and sold all my prog rock records. Still trying to get them back.
Because Gary, you probably never even heard The Wall when it came out, did you? It was just, you know, who would have played it to you?
No, I heard The Wall when it came out, for sure. I mean, I was still keen at... I mean, what year was The Wall, Guy?
79.
79. Oh, no, I would have... I mean, certainly, because, I mean, Every Brick was a big single, wasn't it? And I did buy it, yes. You know, I'd sort of secretly buy it.
You didn't. You didn't tell anyone.
I did. I do have the copy of The Wall. But the early stuff, Medal... Where Medal came into my life was definitely the old Grey Whistle Test, which is a fantastic TV show we used to have on BBC Two, and it used to have it was a sort of art music show, and it had progressive groups on it. And
well, it was for albums. It was based on albums rather than singles. That was the point.
And there was a famous video that went with One of These Days, Cartoon Ballerinas. Do you remember that, Guy?
Yes, it was done by Ian Eames, and it was actually done for the band, but I don't think they used it live. We used it with David on the last tour, and I think that was the first time it was ever actually used alongside that song in concert.
And because of that, I bought the Medal album, and of course Echoes, you know, it's part of, you know, whenever you'd turn up at people's houses late at night and people of a certain age in double denim, they'd be playing Echoes, which is a phenomenal piece of music.
So did you ever think all these years later you would be... playing with him?
Imagine if he said yes.
He did it first. I have to say, Guy, because the first, and I know you know all these stories, he knows everything about me. So if he's got a bored look on his face, it's because he's heard it hundreds of times. I promise I won't mention the Sex Pistols gig or Bowie at Hammersmith.
You did! You just did!
But the very, very first thing I ever played with other musicians, I was about 12. And I went to a little drama club, and there were some actors there, young actors, 12-year-old actors. You know, we were all doing television at the time. And Phil Daniels was one of them, and a guy called Peter Hugo Daly. And we all went down to this kind of counterculturalist's house. This kid was parents with these wild counterculturalists. And we went down into the basement, and he had a keyboard, and we brought our electric guitars down. And we jammed Set the Controls to the Heart of the Sun. All day. That was the only track we wanted to play. And that's one of the songs we do every night. Little by little, the night turns around. Counting the leaves which tremble at dawn. Lotuses is lean on each other.
I've always said that Set the Controls for the Heart of the Sun is basically the greatest song that Joy Division never wrote. You could stick it in the middle of Unknown Pleasures and you wouldn't bat an eyelid. Do you know what I mean? It's the first piece of post-punk, I would say. Too long, obviously, by about 10 minutes, but...
But it's that bass riff, it's that riff, isn't it? The guitar riff. It's like which you can imagine Peter Hook doing, couldn't you?
You can so imagine Ian Curtis. Little by little... the sun turns around. You know, it's pure Joy Division.
Sorry, do you want to butt in and ask any questions at any time for free, you know?
Because we'll just go, you know, we'll just go. That's the problem.
Talking with Guy Pratt and Gary Kemp of Saucerful of Secrets. We need to take a break every once in a while, so why don't we do that right now?
Hey, Pantheon listeners, Christian Swain here, taking a break from listening to a little Shout It Out Loudcast episode. Love Tom and Zeus talking all things Kiss. Of course, I was listening to them on my new Raycon wireless earbuds. They have quickly become my go-to earbuds because of the comfort. These soft tips are the best I've ever used. And at this price, plus a Pantheon discount, Raycon is really hitting on all marks. Sound quality is great too. I really love having these three EQ options because I like more bass in the music, but less in my podcast. 8 hours of playtime for the battery is great as well. Surround sound, noise isolating, and awareness mode are all included. These are great earbuds. Go to buyraycon.com/pantheon today to get 20% off your Raycom order plus free shipping. That's right. You'll get 20% off and free shipping at buyraycon.com/pantheon. buyraycon.com/pantheon. Hey, Pantheon listeners, Christian Swain here. Another day, another podcast I'm working on. This time, it's Famous and Gravy with Amit and Michael. I want to let you know that I loved the Factor Meals package so much that I re-upped for myself, and then I sent a package to my in-laws. Like I was with my first shipment from Factor Meals, the in-laws were as excited to try one of the prepared restaurant-quality meals. Well, they got the shipment to Protein Plus Meal Plan and were very impressed. See, being in their 80s, anything to make the meal prep easy is a plus for them. They heated the oven per instructions and minutes later were enjoying a very delicious, nutritious, and dietitian-approved meal. One big win for me. But what really floored them was the taste. Like I told you, it's surprising how good these meals taste. Restaurant quality indeed. And like my own shipment, it really was everything Factor Meals said it would be for some seniors. No prep, no mess meals. Factor Meals are 100% ready to heat and eat. Take it from me and my in-laws. Head to factormeals.com/pantheon50 and use the code Pantheon50 to get 50% off. That's factormeals.com/pantheon50 and use the code Pantheon50 to get 50% off. Thank you, Factor Meals.
Welcome back to the What Difference Does It Make podcast and our guests, Gary Kemp and Guy Pratt.
You guys do have a podcast. I don't know if you realize that together. And I listened, you got a great first guest.
We realized that.
Yeah, exactly. Well, most of the time you're interviewing contemporaries and it's kind of nice. When you were talking to...
Yes, called Rock On Tours. And yes, and it's the number one music podcast in Britain.
We're fans.
On the podcast, you did mention like that See Emily Play by Bowie was your entry into Floyd. Who bought pinups?
Yeah. I mean, I was just saying, Guy, because I think I've said that before, that, See Emily Play was the Bowie version was the first version I ever heard.
No, I know. And you do. I mean, and there are definite, you can hear the Ronson in the way you play it.
Somebody's dreams till tomorrow.
I took some of the, there's one particular riff that he plays on pinups in See Emily Play that I still use today in the show. I think Sid Barrett and Bowie, there was a link between Sid that Bowie picked up on, that Johnny Rotten picked up on, that all of those sort of post-punk chaps you're talking about, Guy, that they all had that element of Sid.
No, absolutely. But also, I think there's the thing which is quite important about pinups, which might get overlooked, which is because when I discovered The Who, which was 70s Who, was a fantastic rock band, and you go back and listen to those old singles, which are amazing, but it's the 60s group. And what Bowie did with pinups was he took all those songs and recorded them the way they would have sounded if they'd been recorded in the 70s. So, it was this brilliant thing for all the kids who were discovering Bowie, that he was saying, here's the music I discovered, and here it is in a way that's palatable to you.
Mm. Except his version of Can't Explain sounds like you put the 7-inch on and played it at 33, doesn't it? It's fantastic.
Yeah, but it is metal. It is metal, and Can't Explain is a metal song, really, isn't it?
So do you bring that to 2022, like the sound of Floyd from the 60s into the now? How does the sound evolved?
Yes and no. In the, I mean, the sounds are a lot more sophisticated, but there's lots of stuff where I know, you know, Gary and Lee both enjoy finding a lot of Lee's old sounds. But then we have, you know, the whole thing is that Dom, you know, because Dom knew Rick and worked with him, but Dom has worked with me for years and he was in the Orb. So he brings that whole psychedelia 2.0 thing. So there's all sorts of slightly ravey kind of electronica elements, which are kind of what Rick would have done if it was later. And it's because it's, if we made did a show that just sounded like Pink Floyd in 1967 to modern ears, it's going to be a bit thin, you know. So some of it, there's stuff you play with, there's stuff you leave well alone.
You know, when we first got together with Nick, we were all very much individuals and musically, in that we would want to express ourselves musically and creatively, and it wasn't a tribute group. You know, we're not Australian Pink Floyd who try and emulate every single note and intake of breath. So I think, you know, that freedom that we had with the arrangements and with the parts was from Nick, obviously, because he's allowed to do it. You know, it's his band, he can express it. But the other thing we wanted to achieve in this band was to get across some of Nick's personality. And it is true to say that David and Roger present a rather sort of heavier, lot of it, sort of deep gravitas in their music, you know, and seriousness. And it seems to have got more and more serious as people have looked back on it over the years. Nick is the polar opposite. He's very, very funny guy and very light personality. And I think we wanted to try and get some of his personality across on stage.
Absolutely. But there's also the point that because we're doing that early Pink Floyd, the whole point of that early music was it was all very freeform and very expressive. And like, you know, we've been listening to lots of bootlegs to learn the songs because they didn't play it the same every, you know, or twice often with a lot of it. And so I think the point is that if you want to sound like early Pink Floyd, you've got to bring some of that sort of expressive in the moment stuff, or you're not actually honoring what the band was.
Do you think with this audience that they're expecting it to be true to whatever it was, even though it was different every night, true to it was the vibe of what it was?
No, I think what people are getting, not necessarily, because especially with a lot of this stuff, people don't know it that well. They don't know it like they know Dark Side of the Moon or like they know Wish You Were Here. So, you know, we got that on our side. The thing is, I've got a nearly 40-year history with Pink Floyd now, and the from playing with Pink Floyd and then playing with David for years, the thing you always get with an audience is like, oh my God, I'm seeing David Gilmour play Comfortably Numb. Oh my God, I'm hearing them play Money. Whereas with this audience, it's people going, oh my God, I never thought I would hear this song. I never thought I would get to see a member of Pink Floyd playing this song live. So, you know, it's a different kind of weight.
And Guy's right what he says about the sort of how much the expectation of certain songs. We don't go there, you know, when they're listening, you know, some of that later Pink Floyd stuff, some of those guitar solos are like Shakespearean soliloquies. People know them phrase by phrase. And so the earlier stuff, I think we have a lot more freedom with.
Okay. And speaking of the audience, Gary, I heard you comment that in one of your interviews with Nick on Rock and Tours that you said you were surprised the first time you played live because you're not used to so many blokes in the audience.
But that is.
Are you used to it?
I'm getting used to it. It's still a element of disappointment when I see the front row isn't a sea of hands reaching out to me. Of course, we actually played to a lot of very excitable young people across Europe, didn't we, Guy? I mean, it's a mixed audience.
Oh yeah, no, absolutely, Gary. But you're not playing to your, you know, you're not playing to the Spandau audience. You're playing to you. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I am. Exactly. You mean people with receding hairlines. But no, it's a fantastic audience. It's a very appreciative audience. You know, they hang on Nick's every word. You know, part of the show is we talk, you know, there's quite a lot of talk from Nick, a few storytelling moments. And you got to see these people while you can. We're getting towards the end of the golden era. And it's great that people like him and the Stones and, you know, Paul McCartney is still getting up on stage.
Yeah, actually, next week I'm seeing Roxy Music.
Oh, I was so annoyed that we don't cross paths with them. Of course, that's, you know, the dear friends of Gary and myself. And of course, I played for Roxy. Yeah, that would be great. You're going to have a great night.
Okay. Oh, good. Good to know. I got the thumbs up.
I've seen the set list, but it's like, you know, come on, man. Roxy Music. It's like every, you know, everyone a winner.
Well, I mean, Guy, you have a theory, don't you? They sort of invented that lead bass sound.
Have I?
No, you think you did you say was it Love is the Drug? I can't remember. You said was one of the first types.
No, Love is the Drug is the birth of disco bass, of proper disco bass. If you listen to the timing, yeah, the timing of Good Times, it comes from Love is the Drug. Which is funny because Chic based themselves on Roxy Music.
Yeah, because when we interviewed Nile Rodgers on our show, and he was saying that that it was going to a Roxy gig that made him form Chic, didn't you know? And Chic was the closest name he could get to Roxy Music.
Yeah, he called up Bernard, went, "I've got it."
There you go. I knew I was right somewhere.
Amazing.
That's the nicest compliment you could pay Nile Rodgers to say that about you.
Right.
He's worked with Brian ever since. You know, I've worked with Brian with Nile. He's worked with him for years and years and years. Very nice. Anyway, sorry.
No, that's quite all right. I guess we could steer it back to Nick Mason. You had mentioned on your podcast that, you know, there was a new Pink Floyd song that came out.
Yes.
And you were in the studio and you mentioned that it wasn't until Nick Mason sat behind the kit that you're like, oh, we have Pink Floyd here.
Yeah.
What was it? What was that?
There's a thing with Nick, and it's really interesting because Nick is now getting this appreciation amongst drummers in the same way as it kind of came to Rick Wright quite late from keyboard players. But he's getting this appreciation now in the same way as Ringo didn't get it. And for years, when suddenly all these musicians are going, hang on a minute, because, Nick has this, drummers lose their minds over Nick now. I've played with him so long, I've kind of taken it for granted. You know what a privilege. He just has this loping time thing, which is fantastic, which is what makes things Pink Floyd. You know, it's like it's just so, I don't know, oozy and sexy. Bill Bruford said a really funny thing, because the joke with Pink Floyd is it's always that everything is so slow. My joke is, you know, David Gilmour was the only person I've ever played with who actually slows down live rather than speeds up, and nothing is actually ever slow enough. So if Comfortably Numb was played at the tempo he wants it, I'd still be at the Albert Hall from 2016. But Bill Bruford said, when he was on our podcast, said the thing with Pink Floyd is they're not actually as slow as you think they are, which I thought was a really interesting observation.
Yeah, I mean, it can be those tom-tom fills when we know we've got to come in on beat one as it ends, can be quite glacial, can't they? That's actually the beauty of it, I think.
But in the other way, so the Syd Barrett songs are kind of like, something like Bike is uncountable. Every verse is completely different. And it's mad. And Gary and I had to like rack our brains because we've got to sing it. You've got to pay attention. Da, 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 da. To Nick, it's nothing. Just sail straight through it. You know.
I've got a bike. You can ride it if you like. It's got a basket, a bell and rings and things to make it look good. I'd give it to you if I could.
Guys, we're eating up your airspace. I don't know what we do. Get way to get us on.
Have we asked any questions?
We do have to wrap it up.
We've got to say goodbye, haven't we?
We will see you guys in LA at the end of October.
That's
so
fantastic.
Yeah, look forward to it. Thank you so very much. This was wonderful. Loved it.
Thanks, you guys.
All right.
So Gary and Guy seem to have a good time. How about yourself, Holly?
I had a great time. I could listen to them all day.
Okay. Well, you can on their Rock on Tours podcast.
I had a great time, and I was really pleased to be able to give them a platform for their shenanigans.
Sure. Hopefully our listeners had a good time. If you did, this is just a little snippet of what we do every week, every Friday. So please subscribe. Follow us on social media. I'm not sure where we are. Where on social media can you find us?
I'm shocked you don't know this yet, Dave, but we are at WDDIM Podcast and on YouTube at What Difference Does It Make Podcast.
Oh, WDDIM stands for What Difference Does It Make. We hope to be in your headspace on Fridays whenever we drop our new episode. So until then, this is Dave.
This is Holly.
Check you later.
Over and out.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more fantasy points.